The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
9 weeks of rally action, misses and beat create wild moves. We're talking triple tops and a look at the Citi Economic Surprise Index. All this and much more on episode number 601 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome aboard. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, where you and I come together each and every week to talk about markets, investing, and finance, and topics all related. And yes, this is Andrew Horowitz. I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast and very happy to have you along with me today. It's a great opportunity to spend some time looking at what's happening moving ahead to next week. And I get the opportunity to spend some time with you and some great guests. We don't have a guest today, but we're going to have some wonderful guests lined up over the next several weeks. Took a few weeks off of the guest to talk about some of the information that's out there, markets and related structures, the news, et cetera. So hopefully you're enjoying what we've been talking about, getting a good education from some of the things that we have been discussing. I did some fishing, by the way, over the weekend, and I went on a friend's boat. And over the last few weeks, here we are in South Florida. The weather's been good. It's been windy. It's winter season. So therefore, you do see the seas a little bit rougher than the summertime, of course. And here I am going fishing. We're doing the sailfish run because it is sailfish season, getting some kingfish and bonita, some tuna, you know, a variety of different things that happen. So I saw that on Saturday, the seas looked a little bit rough, as we call it in the industry, snotty. They were kind of like 3-4 footers, maybe. The wind was kicking up a little bit. And I said, all right, I'm not sure if I'm going. When my friend called me, he says, hey, let's go. I said, okay, all right, good. So I get to his house at 6 a.m. Let me tell you, before I even go any further, not the best idea on this particular day, as the seas did look a little bit rough. But all right, we had a big enough boat. We figured, what the heck. So we get out there, we get out to the ocean and noticed, wow, these seas are a little bit rougher than we thought they would be, and decided, we're going to go anyway. Okay, so we set out, we went north, we wanted to set up and find a spot that was appropriate, usually in the 100-foot depth to about 250. We drift throughout that area. We're heading north, and we're driving along and up and down the big waves. It's hitting us broadside. They're coming from the east, northeast, and we're heading north, so we're getting hit kind of broadside with this. The boat's taking it really well, and then all of a sudden, we go up, and we're thinking about what's coming down, and it was like a brick wall we hit. Right from the starboard side, the right side of the boat, bam, slam. I mean, just like an absolute brick wall. The whole boat shuddered. I get kicked to the right. I'm standing to the left of my friend who's driving the boat. I get kicked to the right. My upper arm slams into the steering wheel. And I was just seeing, stars. I was like, oh, that is not good. And meanwhile, I got to retain my grip again and get back into my place because we're going up, still going up and down these waves, right? So I get kicked and pain is just shooting up my arm. It's unbelievable. He says, are you okay? I'm like, I'm okay. I'm fine. Keep going. It's no problem. If that weren't enough, so we get and we're fishing out there and we're doing our thing and we get a shark on and it kind of tries to tie itself up in the engines. So we turn the engines off. We lift the engines up and we put the engines down. Even after some time that we were out there, we were just drifting. It's fine. What we're supposed to be doing. And we decide we're going to start the engines back up. Well, the starboard engine starts. The port engine starts. The center does not. Nothing that we can do to get this thing rolling again. And now we're here, out here in 4 to 6 foot seas. We're getting slammed all over the place. We look at each other. We're like, what are you thinking? And I said, listen, winds are picking up. My arm's killing me. It's a couple hours later. why don't we start heading in a little bit and see what happens? So we headed all the way back. We had a couple of fish. We had a bonita, also called a false albacore. We had a shark on, but that was it. It was not a day that we should have really been out there. So for all the work, being up at 5 a.m., getting all the stuff schlepped over, the rods, all the bait, all that, I came back with a fish that's inedible. The bonita is not even edible. We use it for bait. Nice big fish, but we cut it up and use it for bait. And a giant black and blue on my upper arm. That's my reward. I thought I'd just tell you that story real quickly. Let's talk about what's going on with the markets. More importantly, what's happening this week and what happened last week. Last week was kind of interesting. You know, 9 weeks of up action after what everybody thought was going to be the end of the markets. That was it. Done. Going back down to zero. Never coming back up. And meanwhile, we get this incredible V move that we've seen. 9 weeks of continuing rally modes overall. And we've had some really interesting earnings that have come out. We've had some really good beats, or at least some that were better than expectations. And those have been really moving stocks dramatically. If you noticed last week, we saw Roku, which when the earnings came out after the close on Thursday, stock was up and down and up and down, and people couldn't really figure out what exactly was going on there. And then it just skyrocketed. Roku ended up the week 23%. Avis, car company, was up 23%. The Trade Desk, which does an automated auction style advertising for social media. They're the company that you go to, and you can actually use it for an advertising process. And what's the word I'm looking for here? It's advertising software that will insert your ads according to where you want them to go and manage. There you go, an advertising management system. And they do a few other things. But basically, they were up 25% for the week. Universal Display was up 23%. And the company that seems that it's supposed to be going bankrupt, PCG, the Pacific Gas and Electric, it's up 18% for the week. That one's pretty impressive. Now, we also had some that were worse than thought. We had Stamps.com, a company that I have always wondered how their price was as high as it was. And if you've followed me for a long time, you know I've talked about this before. Down a whopping 58% for the week after they came out with the earnings and announced that they're not going to exclusively offer U.S. Postal Service services any longer. We saw Concho was down 13%. We saw Kraft Heinz, you know, the maker of mac and cheese and the maker of ketchup and other condiments, off by 26% for the week at an all-time low. That really was problematic for some other companies like Berkshire Hathaway, which we'll talk about in a moment. Fresh Del Monte was also down about 21%. So there was some real winners for the week, a lot of losers also, but we're also seeing that breadth is starting to widen out as this rally continues. And that's a good sign overall. So there's participation in all areas and size, in market cap size, as well as in sectors. So we're seeing that there is a broadening of this rally that usually is the case when you see things starting to pick up after a major drop. Because what's happening is that at first people are thinking, well, I don't really believe it, but let me get into maybe some of the stocks that I want to get into that were beaten up. And let's take a look at where we can actually get into a quality name at a decent price. And people are picking specific areas. And then as the rally picks up in steam, people start just putting it into everything and saying that, you know what, as the market's going up, I want to participate. So they get back into their ETFs and they get back into their broad-based mutual funds. And what happens is it broadens out the rally. And that is what we've seen. That's a good sign, actually. Of course, everything can change, but it's a good sign when you do see the rally broadening across many different areas. Now, one of the things that we did talk about and we've had a lot of discussion is about this concept of the ETFs in particular that are they give individuals the ability to buy into a stock or a stock index, better yet, anytime during the day with one click of a button. So whether you're buying the NASDAQ 100, you're buying a Russell 3000, Russell 2000, S&P 500, with one click of a button, With one investment, you get to have the entire basket. And that, I believe, was one of the reasons that we saw much of the markets fall down back in the end of 2018, where a lot of people were dumping stocks and they were dumping their ETFs as well. And what happened there was that the exact opposite of what we're seeing now is going on, where people were not willing to even hold on to their broad basket of stocks and therefore were selling it. And as they were selling it, it created a cascading effect to the downside, which is what's happening now to the upside. So if that makes any sense, with the ability and the more recent ability to buy and sell ETFs and large baskets of stocks at one time with a click of a button, it has helped and hurt markets and is creating an additional amount of potential for volatility. And as companies are retiring more shares through stock buybacks, the potential for liquidity on the upside and downside creates squeezes and sell-offs that are much more dramatic. Now, the VIX closed the week right at about, I think, 15, somewhere right around that level. So we saw it come down from where it was back in December. It looked like it was going to hit 40 at any time, but it came back very significantly, and that's what the VIX does. The volatility has been non-existent over the last 9 weeks. Yeah, there was a couple of days here and there that there was some pickup, but generally speaking, the longer trend of volatility has really dissipated significantly to a point that the VIX is not really being bought. It's still elevated from where we saw it in 2017 when we saw those 9 handles and 10 handles on a regular basis. But it's more at a normal level right now. 15 is the longer term average. And therefore, that is a reasonable level that you can't really say, well, people are worried or people are too bullish. It's right in between that. It's people in neutral in terms of their concern about risk or volatility. Better said, volatility, not risk, volatility. I wanted to focus on a few things during the show today, and I thought I would talk about the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index, and then we'll get into a discussion about what's going on this week coming up with regards to the economic numbers, because I think it's important to look at this. Now, the Citigroup Economic Index, I've talked about this a long time ago, and I've kind of mentioned a few times here and there. I mentioned on DH Unplugged this week. It's a way to look at the actual economic, you can look at the actual economic reports versus expectations. And what it does is it says, all right, What are economists expecting for this number, whether it's housing or durable goods or maybe even inflation or GDP? What is the expectation and what is the reality? If in fact economists are low, the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index says, well, that was a surprise to the upside and scores it that way. So now you have one data point that is scored to the positive. On the other hand, if an economist is too high and the actual number comes out lower, so it's a consensus of what economists are saying. So for example, if the economists say, well, we see the GDP is going to be 3%, that's a consensus, and it comes out at 2.6, let's say. Well, you'd see a move lower. The surprise was lower. So this is a moving scale over time, and it takes in consideration all the various economic indicators that are out there that are compared then to what economists are saying that they believe it should be. And we look at this as either a plus or a minus. So if it's exactly zero line, pretty much all economists are right in line with what expectations and reality is. So when we see that, it's neutral. It doesn't mean anything. There's also some question as to the importance of this particular economic index to begin with, especially how it relates to stock prices, because there's some concern that, well, people are looking at this and does it really matter? I think it matters. I think all the various inputs you need to put into your equation when you're looking at the markets, you're looking at the economy, you're looking at what the appropriate price multiple should be on a stock and what the price opportunity is for either an upside or a downside move. Of course, there's also technicals, but I'm talking about just the economic backdrop and how that really relates to what we look at for stock prices. So while a lot of people say, don't even look at this, what's the difference? Economists are always wrong. They're always readjusting. And all that. I agree with that. However, let's take it and let's look at this and break it down a little bit more and see if it is, in fact, useful. Let's see if we can find some reason to even look at this or just throw it in the garbage entirely. I don't think that's really appropriate. I think we really should be looking at this because it does hold a good piece of information in the big puzzle. And where are we now is the question. So now we're sitting here at negative 23. So we're negative. I've seen as low as 120. So negative 23 is not the worst thing we've ever seen. But what it is telling us is that economists have been much too optimistic in their estimates on the economy and what reality is. And this has been rolling down since about, we look at it back around 2018, with some pops on the upside here and there, of course, and you did see that there is some movement and it is something that moves on a regular basis. Economists were clearly a bit on the wrong side of the estimates since 2018, as they've been basically too optimistic. Let's just state that. So why is this important is the question, right? Why are we looking at this? Remember that economists at firms that focus on fundamentals. So you have these firms that work on a fundamental equation when they look at how they're going to actually price stocks. And they look at the economy as a base for estimates, and they're using these as input into their stock estimates. So as an example, if the economy is on solid footing, and economists are, let's just say the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index at zero. It's neutral. In other words, everything is coming in as expected. You could say that, well, as they pass that information off to their stock analysts and they look at what their firm is saying the economy is doing and how, in fact, the economy is actually done, they may be able to project that earnings and revenue growth may be continuing in this manner. So you'll see that stock analysts will continue to increase their price estimates over time. There isn't a lot of concern about a backdrop of economics that's faltering. So they're not going to really do a lot of changes to their models, whether it's dividend discount model or just some kind of pricing factor based on a multiple. So when we look at this, you can say the opposite is true as well. If economists are expecting a strong economy, but yet at the same time, we do see that there is a disconnect between what they're believing and what's happening, you may see that the stock analysts that get this information and see this reality happening in virtually real time may look to change their PE multiples and their multiples outward because they're concerned about how is this going to play into companies' ability to increase their earnings, increase their revenue, increase their margins. And what happens is then they start to consider adjusting their price expectations for stocks. And as that filters down into the news and reports, investors may be now thinking that maybe I shouldn't put so much money in there. Maybe the recommendation from that firm says, you know, hold off on putting new money to work right now because we're seeing that the economic backdrop is slowing and that's going to be a problem for stocks, et cetera. So if they're off and if economists are off and their pricing factors for what's happening with the economy is off, it may flow down right into what the other side of the house is doing with stock-based expectations and their guidance and their numbers that they're projecting for companies. It's all connected somehow. Now, is it outright connected? Probably not. Is it going to be where you see the Citigroup City Economic Surprise Index dropping down and all of a sudden you see a major change right away to analysts' expectations in terms of stocks and therefore a stock market correction? Probably not. If we did see a consideration being put on this in a very big way, you would see it act almost in real time. That's not how it works. It takes time. Because economists right now will then adjust their numbers so they're not so far off. That's what they do. Economists are wrong all the time, but they're right all the time at the same time. Have you ever noticed this? They're wrong. It's like the weather. Well, it could be this, it could be that. Somewhere it's raining. So they predicted rain, so they're right. So when we look at this, I think it's important to recognize that while a move that is predicated on the economy slowing down based on this index is probably not the best thing to do. But when we do see the Citigroup Economic Index fall drastically, we know that there was a potential for a change in the economic outlook, downgrades, in other words, as economists are often behind the curve. That's the big issue right there. And they may continue to do so and bring down their expectations and their guidance as to where they believe the economy is going, or fall or rise or whatever. They're going both sides. And that may actually have some impact in the markets. If we look at just what happened in November through December, there was a pretty big move to the downside of the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index. They just call it the Citi Economic Surprise Index. I throw the group in there. I'm an old timer. Can't teach a new dog too many new tricks. An old dog too many new tricks. But when I think it's something that we should be watching. And you could look at this, you could find this on the web. If you just type in Citi Economic Surprise Index, Yardini puts out an interesting daily note on this of all the various Citigroup economic indices compared to a variety of different indices and backward-looking comments. And it's kind of interesting to look at. So I don't think we're necessarily in the danger zone right now, but it's negative nonetheless. Something to watch, something to look at, something to consider in your overall analysis that you're doing on a regular basis, hopefully, to understand what's happening with the strength of the underlying economy and how stocks may react accordingly. Because yes, we do know one thing, that during times of economic slowdowns, when there is a consistent level of economic slowing happening, stocks get repriced. It may not happen immediately. It happens as a process. And it may not be as drastic as we saw in November through December or any time period otherwise, but there's something going on when we see a very significant move to the downside, as maybe it's catching economists off guard. And if it continues and stays with that same trend for some time, there's probably going to be some kind of significant change of direction for stocks, as those are part of the economy. So take a look at that. Something to think about. I want to mention also DH Unplugged. If you haven't listened to this show Tuesday nights, or you can find it on iTunes or any other podcatcher style website app thing. Great conversations recently with John C. Dvorak. We cover a wide range of topics on that podcast. I mean, everything from related to financial, unrelated to financial, markets, global news. We cover a lot. And it's a pretty fun show with games that we play with listeners and more. So I think that's something to listen to on a regular basis. DH Unplugged. You can go get the podcast and check out the games that we play, like Close to the Pin and the weekly stock picks over on DHUnplugged.com. Now I'm going to get out this page I just printed because I want to go through the economics that we're looking at for next week. Since we just talked about the Citi Economic Surprise Index, I thought it would be appropriate to talk about what are we looking for next week. And last week, there really wasn't a lot going on. It was a pretty quiet week overall. We saw some Fed speak and the Fed parade come out, and we saw minutes. This week, starting on Monday, we got wholesale inventories. Expectations are for a 0.5% increase, which is a little bit higher than last. Usually those are an increase in inventories is good for GDP overall. Tuesday, we have the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index, which is expected to increase by about 4.5%, pretty much in line with what we've seen in the last several months. But that has been a slowing, that has been growing, but the growth has been slowing. What I mean by that is we saw 5% a year ago or so. Now we're down to 4.5% in the 20-city Case-Shiller Home Price Index, meaning that home prices are not appreciating as much as they thought. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that actually miss and see some further downside pricing. We have the housing starts index, 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday also. That is pretty important. We're going to see the continuation, it looks like, from a consensus-based estimate of a lower number compared to what we've seen. Building permits are also going to be coming out. And consumer confidence will be coming out at 10 o'clock. Expectations are for about 123, still very elevated in the consumer expectations or consumer confidence levels, a little bit lower than last month or so. Wednesday, we're going to see factory orders. We're going to see monetary policy testimony starting at about 10 o'clock in the morning, where Fed Chair Powell is going to give his semi-annual monetary policy testimony to Congress. Pending home sales at 10 o'clock and some crude inventories also. Thursday, here's some important information. We're going to see GDP come out. We're going to see the GDP advanced for quarter four. Remember, I think that quarter one is going to see a big slowdown. So we're still in quarter four here. Looking at a 1.9% on a consensus basis from about 3.4%. I've seen the range from about 1.9 to about 2.3. So I just don't think we're going to see a lot more. There has been a pretty noticeable slowdown with manufacturing. Nothing crazy, but yet not a 3% GDP print level that we've seen. Initial claims, continuing claims, Chicago PMI are all on Thursday. And then we head the next day. We got Friday, the beginning of March. We're not going to see the payrolls till the following week. But we're going to see personal income, personal spending. We're going to see ISM manufacturing. That number is expected to be 55.5, down from about 56.5. And the University of Michigan's consumer sentiment, the final number for February, expecting about 95. That also has dropped off pretty significantly. Consumers really caved up a little bit after that. They got spooked after that whole market movement that we saw in November and December, and particularly in December. So those numbers will be a little lighter. I would expect that starting in January with the pickup of the stock market, you'll see a commensurate move with regards to the numbers of consumer confidence as well. Moves hand in hand. People are happier that they have more money in their 401ks, in their stock accounts, in their investments. They're feeling better. They'll go out and spend and do a few things. When people don't feel so good, whether their pricing of their house is lower, their 401ks are down, their retirement plans are down, their investments aren't looking so good, they get worried. They kind of say, you know what? I'm not going to spend right now. Just a natural process. So take a look at all that. We'll see that next week. What else do we have to talk about? Let's see here. I want to talk about triple tops. Let's make sure I covered everything else here on my list, on my outline. No, I did not. I did not. Wait, let's come back. We'll talk about triple tops in a second. I have a whole section of things of checked off here that I want to talk about. So we had some earnings that are going to also start to tail off next week. We have some big names reporting of interest. We have Costco next week, H&R Block, Kroger, Salesforce, Kohl's. We'll see some more of the department stores come out. Some China names that we'll see like Sina and Weibo. Also in the area of, we'll call it retail, but specialty retail. We got Abercrombie & Fitch, Dollar Tree. We also have the avocado men and women of California, Calavo Growers. They're also in Mexico and a few other areas. Calavo Growers, the avocado company, coming out and giving their results, as well as the Craft Beer Alliance. Over the weekend, there was some interesting news. We saw that there was a pretty massive and striking report on Paul Manafort that came out looking for some major jail time and all. I don't think this is going to have a lot of... It's not going to be a lot of market movement. The only thing that we'll see that probably is going to be significant when it comes to the markets is when and if and when Mueller comes out with some kind of report that is negative for President Trump. I don't know if there's going to be or not. I don't know what he has or doesn't. I don't know if he's ever going to come out with something or not. I don't know if it's going to come out and then we're not going to see it. I have no idea. I don't think anybody really knows. At this point, it's been dragging on forever. So these other ancillary issues, we pretty much know, and from at least the reports we've seen, that Paul Manafort has got a lot of dirt. He's done a lot of bad things. He's going to be locked up for a while. So this is going to be something that is important as a piece to this whole Mueller investigation and also the relationship of the people involved in the Trump campaign and the Trump, the Trump businesses and the political backing of Trump and related. But I don't necessarily think that this is going to be anything more than just one more piece that everybody pretty much knew, because this is information that came out. It's worse than everybody thought at this point in terms of getting rid of the plea deal and all the, you can read it. It's like 800 pages. Have fun with it. I'm not reading it. But we do know there's some real negative information in there. So that, again, not going to be too market moving. Berkshire Hathaway, though, has some interesting aspects of their earnings that came out over, I think it was after close on Friday, and the meeting throughout the weekend, and the Berkshire Hathaway note that came out. We saw that Warren Buffett's and Berkshire's annual note that hit over the weekend, talked about some gigantic write-downs due to the Kraft Heinz losses. They owned about 26% of the company. I think upwards of $3.5 to $4 billion worth of write-downs that they're going to take. But I thought one of the more interesting things about the letter, and I saw not all of it, I read parts of it. I kind of got stopped on this one issue. And it was the whole idea that the company is suggesting that book value, which was one of the key areas that they wanted you to look at for decades, was the idea that let's look at book value. Let's not look at the day-to-day swings of price. Let's not look at any of the other metrics, because we believe that book value is the best when we're evaluating what is a reasonable value for Berkshire Hathaway. And now they no longer want you to look at that. That metric has been put aside by the company. It's not important anymore. The metric that they're going to look at because of buybacks and things that they're doing internally is price. The price of the company, the price of the stock is, in their opinion, the most important reflection of how the company is doing. Now you need to think about that for a second. We're coming off years and decades of being drilled in our head that essentially the net value of the company was what was important. And whatever the stock does, the stock does. We really shouldn't pay attention to this, because stocks move for a variety of reasons when it comes to markets. And, you know, put that aside. We're long-term players here. We're buy and holds and pretty much hold forever concept. We buy companies when we buy stock. And we know that because obviously we've seen that Berkshire Hathaway will hold stocks even though you wonder why they're still holding them. Look at IBM as an example. Kraft Heinz as another example. They knew some of this. They knew that some of these problems were there because it came out and there was some information that was already out about some of this. Maybe not as severe that we knew about or that the news put out. But there was something in the background and of what was going on with Kraft Heinz that they could have made some changes, but they instead, at least at this point, are still holding on to it, believing that management can get beyond this and taking this big loss. So I started thinking about this whole idea that, well, they're going to be doing some buybacks, which they were against for a long time, and now they want you to look at price and forget about the all-important metric that they were really pimping for a long time. And I said to myself, wait. What does this remind me of? I feel a deja vu. I feel like something. It seems like I've seen this before. Where have I seen this before? Reminds me of Twitter. You remember that years ago that CEO Dick Costello came out and discussed how MAUs, or monthly active users, was the main metric that the Twitter, you have to look at Twitter. This is what it is. You look at the main metric is MAUs, watch it. That's the only thing that matters. Don't worry about any of the other ratios. Don't worry about anything that's going on otherwise. Look at MAUs. And then all of a sudden one day he came out and said, you know what? Don't look at MAUs. Because the MAUs, they're not the key metric. Look at this one instead. And I think he changed two or three times over time. And everybody's like, whoa, wait a second. We're supposed to be looking at this one metric. Now all of a sudden you change the metric. And from there, things just fell apart. Once you start changing a metric a couple of times to keep investors looking at things that maybe you want them to be looking at and believe that that's the best and the brightest metric that will really provide the insight that an investor needs, one and only thing only, why I start to worry. I mean, this thing has been going on for a long time. You've seen it back in the dot-com age when eyeballs were the most important thing to watch, and don't look at earnings because we're negative. Don't look at revenues because it's just growing. Don't look at any of the ratios, just eyeballs. And we know what happened there. Look at Apple. Apple, we were all looking at iPhone sales. What are the key issues? iPhone and all these different sales numbers, and we could see the progression of what was happening. And all of a sudden, they stopped providing that as an important metric. Apple was a little different in all this. But again, conceptually, think about this. When a company changes or somehow stops providing information on something they believe was very important, you have to realize that that's not just as easy as it sounds. Something is going on under the surface when they change something like that. Investors get confused and they also worry. They worry that something is lurking beneath the surface that's probably being covered up. I mean, that's really what you have to be looking at here, that something is probably being covered up. And as such, you have to wonder what's going to happen with Berkshire's stock over the next few weeks or months or years. Because all of a sudden, they're changing the whole dynamic of the company. And again, we've seen this time and time again. GE was another example of this. So we see this over and over. And with Twitter, or again, this goes on a long laundry list of companies that try to shift your attention somewhere else. Now, a lot of us are probably saying, well, no, but Buffett's not doing that. I mean, this is a guy who's a sweet guy and loves hamburgers and milkshakes and buys companies that he knows, but it's not necessarily that company anymore. There's a lot of other players that are really doing things, and they're buying stocks versus companies these days. It's a totally different company than it was, let's say, maybe a decade ago. So with that, they're obviously changing something because they want you to look somewhere else and doing a lot of work on the financial engineering side because they're going to be working on the buybacks, et cetera. So something to look at. I'm kind of curious what's going to happen with the stock and if there's going to be that kind of confusion. But then again, you got a cult-like following, so it may not really hurt too much, but something to consider. Moving along, I mentioned triple tops. Triple tops. You know what they are? They're very easy to find on a stock chart, right? You find where there was a top, it couldn't get below, above it, or triple bottom, can't get below. It starts to move back down. It gets up to that point again, can't get above it, rolls back down. Seems that there's a lot of triple tops these days. Looked at some charts, the small caps, Russell 2000, S&P 500. Looked at the NASDAQ. All have makings of what I would consider triple tops inside of the pattern that we've seen from November 18 to today. Is it important is the question. I mean, that's what we really have to wonder. I think it could be. But I would think that is not as important as the news flow that we're going to see over the next few weeks about a deal from China. Already markets are pricing in probably the best deal and eventually believe it's going to get done eventually. But right now, markets are pricing in that something's going to give. Whether it's the U.S. is going to say, okay, you know what? You're buying all these agricultural products and the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars. Okay. And you're going to promise us this and promise, okay, fine. You know what? Let's just call it a day, clean this up, and look to some of these frameworks and agreements that we're putting on the table as we did a good job. We're done. We're going to claim victory. But the triple tops are important to look at. And they're not as important as if it was triple tops to all-time highs. But they're still within a pattern. I want you to look at some charts and find those, circle those. We're right on the edge and right up to the point on some of these. And so that's something to look at. But again, the main thing that we're going to be looking at is how much is the state of affairs that we're seeing currently with conflicting news and progress and not progress, and we're close, but we're far away from the White House officials. And the fact these tariffs already have been in place for months is going to impact us. The thing is that they're talking about that at the end of this deadline, March 1st, we're going to see a hike of the tariffs on $200 or more billion worth of goods going up to 25%. And already we've been seeing that this is probably not going to happen. We've seen some soft shoeing and backtracking and dancing around that said, you know what? We can let it go on for a little bit longer. We could let this go on and until we actually get a resolution because everybody is cooperating and therefore we're just going to keep the 10% on. So what do we as investors need to think about is the question about how this is going to play out and what is this going to mean to our portfolios? First, the overall trend right now, I don't think there's any mistake in this, is positive. You look at the short-term trend is positive. Longer-term trend is negative. Let me say this again. The longer-term trend is unrecognizable. The mid-term trend is negative. The short-term trend is positive. Earnings are better than feared. There was a real concern that earnings were going to just fall off a cliff. That's a good sign. So this trend, this short-term trend is positive. Good sign. Fed changed their tune. That's supportive. That's good for markets. There's going to be some additional liquidity, at least, hopefully. But you have to wonder if you're going to see a sell the news type of consolidation as some of the recent gains that we've seen in the markets after this massive move may not necessarily be justified. That looks very possible to me. Now, do I think that there's going to be a move down to where we saw ourselves back in December? I think that was a little bit overdone. Unless we are going to see a continuation of bad news for markets around the world in terms of their economics that we're seeing already, the slowdown in China, the slowdown in Europe. Tariffs put onto automobiles of Europe as well and increasing that whole trade war thing that this is going to be a strong arm process to try to get more money out of other places that will hurt their economy, that will eventually circle around and hurt us. Or is it going to be just, we're done and everybody's going to be moving on? Don't forget, the market is a bit of a forward discounting mechanism. So therefore, I think the forward discount that's going on right now is that a deal will get done by March 1st, or at least there'll be some commentary that basically the deal's done. We have to sign an initial and that's it. And everybody's kind of really happy with that right now. And the Fed is basically not going to raise rates for at least another year. That's what's pretty much built into the markets right now. So again, we're back to that really gleeful moment where everything is just fine. The question we have to wonder also is with all this that we've seen that institutions and hedge funds have been on the sidelines. They're really not participating as much in this. You could take this in a few ways. The first thing you could say is, well, maybe the money that they have to invest is going to be invested as they get itchy to participate in this whole process, that things are getting better, that there is the earnings are stabilizing. We're not seeing as much of a drawdown and a rollover. The economy's okay. They're going to get resolution on all these different headwinds, and therefore they're going to start adding money to markets. Now, we also have to wonder whether the smart money is taking a back seat, willing to let the retail investors just, get this movement, but realize that it's going to roll over hard and they're going to take a big hit and they'll get in sometime in the future when it's a lot lower. I don't know. A lot of ways to look at the same thing. And to be honest with you, it used to be very interesting to follow along the hedge fund world, but they've done such a poor job of late that I just can't even... I don't think it's as much of an indicator that we want to really look at. I think the whole idea of money flow, because it has the potential to move so fast around markets, is something that isn't as important as much anymore either. It's important, but I don't think it is the end-all be-all of what's going on. A lot of other things that we could be looking at and that we do look at on a regular basis to find out where the actual money's lying. Again, money on the sidelines is possibly on the sidelines permanently. We don't know at this point. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the show today. We're going to have some guests on starting next week again and get back to our talk about back to our guest interviews. So that'll be a lot of fun. Probably tired of hearing me talk all the time. Hopefully not. Thank you for your emails. Of course, you can send me emails over at Ask Andrew. You can just go over to the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on Ask Andrew, and just send me over a comment, email, question, whatever it may be. Follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the handle. And with that, I will see you next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.